And we welcome you back. Tony Basilio back with you as Ramogi Human now joins us. He's over your National College Players Association. Ramogi, we just had some spirited debate on the program, and I'm player-centric. You know, I'm one of the few guys, and I know you talk to a lot of guys around the country that do what I do. I'm one of the few guys that really, really gets what you do, and I get what's happened. I want to read something to you, Ramogi, as I welcome you to the program. Thanks for coming back with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Did you catch David Cutcliffe's comments as they ran in the News Observer? He was taking on Arian Foster, who dropped dime on the Tennessee program when he was here. And Arian could have easily said he doesn't think the NCAA system's equitable, but he went as far as to say that he got some perks when he was here, and he had people taking care of him on the side and this and that, which I have a problem with, Ramogi, because that, to me, hurts what's going on with kids and boosters, and they're going to be afraid to help kids, and that hurts these kids that are disenfranchised even that much more, in my mind, but that's another story for another day. David Cutcliffe dismissed Arian Foster and said that basically that was pretty disloyal, what he did, which is okay with me, and then he went on to say, and I just want to read something to you, and I want you to tell me what this is indicative of or what your thoughts are. He says, and I quote, "As long as there's the amount of media we have and the opportunity, we're going to, I guess we see protests or whatever. As long as I've been around, and it's a long time, longer than sometimes I like to think, athletes have been treated pretty well. I don't see anybody getting abused. I don't drive a brand new Lexus. I drive a nice car because I choose to. I heard that." He said, "Nobody's getting rich on college athletics." Of course, he's making north of $1 million a year coaching football at Duke, which is a throwaway sport there. I guess nobody's getting rich on college athletics but him. I mean, Ramogi, what are your thoughts on his thoughts?
I mean, I think America knows that that's inaccurate, to say the least. There's plenty of people getting rich, and in America, that's all right. You know, it's okay to be successful, to generate money, to enjoy that. But when you're simultaneously, you know, taking measures, extreme measures to keep the people who are a big part of generating that out of not only, you know, what would be a fair market, you know, that other Americans enjoy, but to the point where you're denying them basic protection. You know, you're not even directing enough to where guys, if they're injured, they can make sure that they're not stuck with medical bills. You're going to guarantee that you're not going to take their scholarships away, to the point at which you're going to deceive them and say, well, this scholarship is full, but leave them with, you know, $3,000 to $5,000 per year out of pocket expenses. You know, these are some of the things. And as the players generate more and more, as the system generates more, you know, as it generates more and more for the people who are enjoying it, it just makes it less credible. Now, I think that, you know, there's a lot of, I won't say a lot anymore. There's some people that are defending the NCAA and the status quo, not many anymore. But, you know, especially when it comes from coaches and athletic directors and people from NCAA headquarters, you know, for them to simultaneously say that college athletes should be quote unquote amateur, which already they're not, they're paid. They're just not taken care of enough in terms of base protection. While they're simultaneously making $500,000 to multi-million dollars, you know, up to, I think Duke coach K made almost $10 million last year, $10 million. People are definitely getting rich, you know, but for them to say that, you know, the players shouldn't be concerned about some of the issues that we're raising, you know, it's evidence to show why players feel like they need to write something during a game. They're saying, hey, no one's listening to us. You know, we have concussion issues. The NCAA turned a blind eye onto. And we have guys that, you know, down the road, have medical expenses that aren't being taken care of. And meanwhile, we're watching all this money change hands, and the TV contracts go up, and a new college football playoff is going to generate over $300 million in new money. And not one word about the issues that we're concerned about.
So are you more concerned with protection issues or getting guys paid?
We've actually never advocated for professional salaries. But, you know, what we recognize is players are already paid. They made that decision back in the 50s to pay the players. They called it a scholarship. They try to, you know, convince people it wasn't really paid. But it's conditional upon you going to work. You go to work. If you don't go to work, practice, workouts, or games, you're going to lose your scholarship. You know, and that's fine. That's the deal players accept. But there's a lot of things that we're pushing, and particularly with the All Players United campaign, the number one priority is concussions. You know, if you look at the NFL and the NFLPA, they've worked together. They're light years away from college sports. You know, and at the very least, for example, one of the biggest things they can do is to reduce contact in practices. You know, you still have the game. You still have guys show up on game day, put on a great product, and compete. But there's no need to hit that much in practice. That's the number one way to reduce the risk. We know football comes with risk. The players know it. You can't completely eliminate it. But there's some common sense things out there that the NCAA has been ignoring us on. You know, and it's ironic. These guys during a football game, you know, they put APU on to highlight in part concussions. And just yesterday, the athletic directors released a joint statement saying that we'll never pay college athletes. We're not asking for that. We're not asking for professional salaries. You know, they mentioned nothing about concussions. You know, we do the one statement that we do make pointing to the new money that's being generated. Right now, there's about $1 billion in new revenue, brand new revenue. So for your listeners to understand, the infrastructure for college sports has already been paid for, taken care of. There is $1 billion in new money coming in, not just this year, every year going forward. And actually, it's going to increase over time because all these TV contracts are backloaded to pay more over time. And so we're saying, look, there's money here to address these issues. Graduation rates is another one. You know, what we would like to see is a trust fund set up to where players can have some support if they don't graduate. They can continue their education. If they do graduate, then maybe they get a little bit of an earmark from that trust fund. It's something similar that we actually won in a lawsuit settlement a few years ago. There was a $10 million trust fund set up for a similar purpose. So the NCAA has already been down that route. So I don't know exactly. Even the O'Bannon case, the plaintiffs, you know, they suggested a trust fund similar to that. And so there's ways to go about it without college athletes having professional salaries. But you know, it's not that there's a lack of solutions. It's just, you know, these people have a big conflict of interest. The people that make all the rules, you know, if for every dime they put into health coverage or education above and beyond what they're doing now, you know, it might come out of their pocket, not out of their current salary, but out of future salaries that are destined to skyrocket.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. As Ramogi Heumann joins us on the program, National College Players Association is his organization. And when he first started, they snickered at him. And I'm going to tell you something, they're not snickering now. You got a lot of attention last weekend when the young men from the Georgia schools came out, I guess in a couple other places as well. Ramogi, is that going to spread?
We're optimistic. We're hopeful. You know, I don't know how long it might take. You know, it may be in a few weeks, maybe, you know, in other sports, you know. But I think that the important thing is that it's already been successful. I mean, this is the biggest statement that's ever been made in terms of college athletes' rights in the history of college sports. That's very clear. So it's already been successful. It can be more successful. It definitely can. You're not going to go into a locker room and find a bunch of players against what we're doing. You're going to find a lot of support, if not unanimous support. There's going to be a lot of guys that want to see what we're pushing for. Now, do they feel comfortable enough to wear it during games? That's the question. You know, obviously, it's a big statement. It hasn't been done for a reason, not because players are just coming to this realization. I mean, I played in, you know, when I was a freshman, it was 1995, and people were talking about this issue. You know, so it's not anything new. It's just an outlet. You know, or, you know, will players actually participate in that? And that remains to be seen. But, you know, as long as the interest is there, then the potential is always there.
Some people are hearing you today, and they're hearing you say things that I'm sure they can't believe. For instance, you keep saying that if you're hurt during competition or you're hurt while working out, you've alluded to this, that there's not proper coverage there or enough coverage there. Could you elaborate on that?
Sure. And I'm sure your listeners have seen, if you think back to the March Madness tournament when Louisville was playing, Kevin Ware landed awkwardly and snapped his leg right in half, one of the most gruesome injuries ever caught on television. And, you know, the questions came afterwards, well, wait a minute, he's going to be taken care of, right? And here is the answer for your listeners. It is optional. First of all, the NCAA is not going to pay for any of it, even though it's their tournament. And for Louisville, although it's the richest basketball team in the entire nation in terms of revenues, was not obligated to pay for one penny. It was optional. Now, Louisville, when asked, they said, of course, we're going to take care of this injury. And the other thing is that they could actually take a scholarship away at the end of the year because, you know, if you can no longer perform like you did, it's their option. You can lose a scholarship if you're in good standing for any reason, whether or not you're hurt or not, whether or not you have good grades or not. At the end of the year, you can lose your scholarship. And yet they're saying that education is a top priority and that NCAA sports is about education. It's a lie. It's not about education. There are no guarantees for these people. And we've gotten, for instance, I got a call from a family from an ACC school. Their kid was a starter, had knee surgery, and the school had a little bit of insurance. The family had some insurance. There was still $5,000 in out-of-pocket expenses. You know, there's still deductibles, there's still co-pays, there's rehab. And the player got stuck with that bill. And the school wouldn't pay it. That bill went into, they were getting collection notices. You know, so these are the types of issues, and they're from a power conference. This is not, you know, one of those schools that are kind of struggling, you know, in a lower division. So, yes, these are some of the things that can happen and do happen, unfortunately.
That is, I don't even want to tell you that you shared that, I think, with us in the past, and I was just kind of speechless about that. What do you think this Division IV thing is going to do that they're kicking around? And obviously they're doing more than kicking it around. They're getting ready to redesign and redevelop a new top of the mark in college football. We've called it, it's been referred to as a super conference for years. They used to laugh at Jackie Sherrill 20 or so years ago when he started talking openly about this. It sounded like science fiction. Closer we get to it, the more he looks like a prophet. How do you think that's going to impact things, this Division IV? Does that give you hope, or is that just more of the fox guarding the hen house?
I think it's more about the power conferences that generate, you know, the money and how and want the power to actually keep more of the money and keep more of the power. And they're talking about governance structure. That's on an institutional basis. You're not talking about health coverage. You know, the most they've talked about is an idea of an optional $2,000 stipend. You know, which, you know, the players are obviously for, but it still falls short at the cost of attendance, the price tag of the school at most schools for a quote unquote full scholarship. But they're, you know, they've held up this stipend issue as if that's the reason why they're doing it. They want more of the revenue. You know, they see no reason to share power and revenue with a lot of the schools that aren't, you know, really a driving force of the economic engine. So at the end of the day, this is going to benefit the institutions, the people who have salaries in those institutions. But in terms of the players, you know, this is not going to have a real impact in terms of how they're treated on a fundamental basis. They're not going to have a seat at the table. Their health and, you know, their bodies and their education, you know, it's not going to be more prioritized. If anything, it might take more of a back seat.
You were talking before, Ramogi, about the concussion issue. And obviously with the NFL, that's been very visible. And we've seen long-term ramifications, you know, Junior Seau. Leslie Frazier. No, not Leslie Frazier. What was the defensive back from Chicago's name that took his life? I can't.
Dave Durison.
Thank you. Dave Durison. We saw a kid yesterday. I don't know if it's related to that or not, but it's a brutal sport. It's a tough sport. And that's a rough level of athletic competition. Do you guys have any statistics? Do you see folks in midlife who, having been exposed to major college football, are showing signs of some of these things through their participation in just major college football? Is there anything out there like that, or is it too early?
No, actually, unfortunately, these issues can develop actually even in college. You know, one of the most disturbing developments that highlights the need for concussion reform on the college level was a suicide by a football player at Penn. His name was Owen Thomas, and he killed himself while he was a captain of the team. He was a linebacker. And his family said this was not him. This was completely not him. He would never do this. They donated his brain to be looked at, and they found CTE in his brain, which is a degenerative brain condition associated with contact sports called chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And he was, at that point, exhibit A, unfortunately, that as early as college that these things can happen. There are also players who have retired, you know, that I've known that have retired over concussions that, you know, still have pretty severe cognitive problems. And so, but one of the things that we're pushing for is for that, again, some of the money, some of the new revenue to be directed for research. I mean, I think there should be enough resources put into play to where we can get an accurate idea of the type of risk that these players are facing. I think in terms of disclosure, I think that's fair for anybody considering playing football. And you know, in terms of safety, you know, let's help develop some of the technology. You know, let's change some of the equipment and let's make things better. But we'll do what we can to minimize the risk, although there will always be risk.
I've always been of the opinion that eventually what we're going to see, if you guys don't get your way, is we're going to see a game that's on national television, a Michigan State, an Ohio, a Tennessee, a Florida, an Alabama, an Auburn, that type deal, where the teams just don't come out of the locker room. That's going to be the only way. I mean, to me, that's the only way you guys are really going to get somebody's attention. Is it going to come to that, Ramogi? I mean, do you see any way, any time that could come to that?
Well, I just want to make clear, our organization has never advocated for that, and we're not advocating for that. But, I think players are frustrated and educated enough to realize that might be one of the options that they pursue. Whether or not it has anything to do with anything organized, I mean, this can happen in a locker room. You know, there were there were talks of back in the 90s of players not walking out on the Final Four, you know, when it was time to tip off, and which I, apparently almost happened. And that wasn't with any external organization. That was just players fed up, you know. Obviously, you know what, and we don't understate the value of what the universities provide. And even the NCAA, they provide an excellent platform. They're a big part of this equation. You know, college athletes, same players going out in the sandlot, you know, they're not going to be valuable even though they're talented because they don't have the exposure, the fan base. That's a big part of what makes college athletes successful and you know, to provide certain opportunities for them. But at the same time, nobody's paying tickets and televising empty stadiums. And so the players, they do have power. It's obvious. They're the talent, and if they're not playing, then there's no money for the coaches, ADs, and the schools, and the exposure. Some of these schools, 90%, there was a study, it might have been Syracuse, but one of the schools, 90% of their exposure, of every time they're mentioned in public, was due to their athletic program. Not academics, not their professors, athletics. And that's what this means to these universities. So, you know, could it be effective? Absolutely. Do players want it? Players don't instinctively want it. They want to play, you know. But it could come to that, especially, you know, if they feel like their voice isn't being heard.
Do you feel like you guys are making progress, or do you feel like eventually we're heading for the cliff?
No, I think there's definite progress. I mean, if you look at 10 years ago, the climate and environment, I've been talking about these issues for over 10 years. But 10 years ago, no one wanted to listen. You know, people were still apologizing for the NCAA, giving it the benefit of the doubt. And now that's all changed. That house of cards, the NCAA had one strength in terms of public opinion. That was that everyone believed that although they might fail sometimes, their best intentions were to try to do everything right. And obviously over the last several years, we've seen that that farce be exposed many, many times. And in the meantime, you know, punishing all these different fan bases, again, you know, USC, Ohio State, Penn State, you know, Miami, all go on and on and on. Eventually you step on enough toes where no one is supporting what you're doing. And they kind of understand, well, wait, let's take a step back. You know, if Arian Foster did accept money, you know, like he says, is that something we need to see our program punished over? Is this, you know, that important for us to see our program possibly have sanctions? You know, I mean, look what happened at USC after Reggie Bush. You know, their program has really gone down and they've been struggling. Was it that important? Did Reggie Bush have superpowers because he received some money from outside people? Did it fundamentally change what he was doing on the field? Absolutely not. You know, it's all an excuse. It's all an excuse to say these guys are amateurs, therefore we get all the money and we don't want, you know, them to have any. And it's not over anything moral. Actually, it's an immoral system. If this is America, you know, we're a capitalistic nation where as long as it's legal, people are free to go in and earn what they want. But the NCAA has gotten all the colleges to collude and make these artificial illegal agreements that violate antitrust laws. You know, that's what the O'Bannon case is about. And they say, no, you know, you guys are not part of America. You guys can't do this. And you have nowhere to go. Look at the basketball players. You know, after the NBA, after they stopped drafting players out of high school, the only way you could get paid was to flee America, to flee the capitalistic juggernaut of the world. And go overseas to try to make some money. Is that really America? Is that what we're standing behind? If there is a moral issue, are we standing for or against what America stands for? And these are fundamental questions that I think are all bubbling over right now. And I think that with the players, and again, you know, we want to see players treated fairly just like other Americans, but at the same time, you know, we're not advocating for professional salaries, but these are conversations that have to be had.
Oh, and I love and respect what you're doing because I think it's, I mean, personally, I think it's God's work, what you're doing. Because I think that's a group of people that doesn't have a voice, that needs a voice. And people say to me, well, they're getting education. Ramogi, you're getting an education if you have the faculties and the capabilities to take advantage of the education. If you don't, you're simply occupying a spot. And you are simply a part of the product. And unfortunately, that's the reality of the situation.
Right. And an objective measure of that is the federal graduation rates, which show that about 50% of football and basketball players do not graduate. 50% are not able one way or another. You know, and to be honest, some of the players are underprepared. They're allowed into the university because the university will make money off them. It's not charity. These guys are allowed to work for the university and provide a service. And then the university knows they have a very small chance of graduating. They pile hours and hours, far more than the 20 hours, you know, the NCAA rules. Even the NCAA did a study. Football players spend about 44 hours per week in their sport alone. And then they pretend like education is a priority. So, you know, to say that the education, they're getting an education, well, half have the opportunity to really get an education. And if it's free, it's not free. It's earned. It's a requirement that you provide very valuable services, more valuable than any other student on campus. You've never seen a group of 100 guys between football and basketball scholarships generate so much money for campuses. And, you know, I understand, and it's not that we're not sympathetic. Look, regular students, you know, they have to take out, you know, large loans and pay, and earn, you know, money through part-time jobs, and it's not easy for them, but it's apples and oranges. You know, you know, you have to look at a situation and say, well, is this fair in America for these people when there's plenty of other examples for people with the same talents and impact can have a lot of support? Is it fair to artificially keep these people in a position where they have no voice, they don't even have health care, and the main thing putting their body at risk is the sport itself? You know, these are things that, again, you know, I think the listeners, I think more and more of America is starting to agree with and kind of see the hypocrisy in it all.
Mogi, thank you. If somebody wants to find out more about your organization, how do they do that?
NCPANow.org. They can join the campaign. This campaign is actually inviting players, fans, family members, supporters. There's petitions. There's a way to participate online. We're also on Twitter at NCPANow and Facebook as well.
Mogi, thank you. I hope you have a great day. Great talking with you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.